You know, sometimes you just need to slow down and enjoy the good things. And they don't get much better than the all-new 2025 Nissan Murano. I mean, it's literally designed to help you relax and re-energize. Between the 64 color options of the Murano's ambient mood lighting and the Bose premium sound system playing your favorite music, it's like your own personal oasis. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Murano today. Ambient lighting and Bose are optional features.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. The Trump Show is back. We have to do this again. We now wake up every morning wondering what insane thing he tweeted out at 3 a.m. This morning, I believe it was a map of North America, just all tan, saying "you America" in it, like no Canada.
Awesome.
We had his press conference where he talked about, the reason Zuckerberg is being nice to him is probably because he threatened him. Tim, how are we supposed to go through 4 years at least of this? Because I got to say, I'm having those thoughts of, wait a minute, 4 years. I mean, I'm 50. I've got like 50 years left. That is that's
yeah.
4 years is an appreciation. That's like 8% of my remaining life.
Yeah,
that I have to live like this.
More than that, probably. For me, I come from a long line of Lebanese that have relatively early deaths. So, it's tough. I mean, I think I said this in a very, I forget if it was on you, with you or with Lovett. In one of the emo episodes after the election, where I was like, "This man is taking the prime years of my life from me. Like, I don't want to think about him.
The best years of my life." Yeah.
We're gonna do it together. Is how we're gonna do it. Is the answer to that question? We're just gonna do it together. And some days we're gonna be like, "Fuck it. Nope. I'm not gonna do this today." And other days we're gonna do it. And today's one of the days we're gonna do it. The states thing, the Canada thing. I did get a kick out of the Canadian MP that was it was this woman. I don't have her name in front of me, but she was like, you know what? I don't know. I think that we should start to pursue Washington and Oregon and California.
Yeah,
you know, I think that, like, why not? Like, okay, we're doing. Are we doing a deal? Are we doing a deal, Mr. Trump? Let's do it. Let's meet in Ottawa. Let's talk it through. You want to do a deal? Let's call your bluff on this. All right. You want Toronto? I'm in San Francisco.
You guys can have Quebec because they're a pain in the ass, and we'll take California.
We should shout out our friends. The producer on the other show, Katie Cooper's in California with the fires in LA. That's fucking awful. But so I guess maybe this is one of those things where you don't call Trump's bluff because he's like, I don't know, maybe I get rid of these blue states. Not that the Canadians are going to be voting for him again, but I guess he's not planning on running for re-election. So I don't know, man. I mean, the press conference was insane. I think in the spirit of what all of our New Year's resolutions were of caring about the important things, of focusing on the important things. I think the way to dissect this is, you know, I think that there are real tangible potential costs to the type of behavior that he's engaging in. I think it is going to distract the Congress. Like, we always talk about distracting us. Trump's distracting us. He's distracting MSNBC. He's distracting. Like, it kind of doesn't really matter whether he's distracting you, listener of the podcast. Like, you can get distracted or not. It's your call. It does matter if he's distracting the House of Representatives, where he's going to need to get stuff passed. You know, one of them sent out a tweet about the Don Roe doctrine and then had to delete it already. You know, like, if they're focused on Panama, they're not focused on very challenging, complex issues they have in front of them about immigration and taxes and energy, which I talked about on the Daily Pod today. So I think that's one thing. And two, I just our alliances, like, we can't predict what actually the impact of this will be, but like, the weakening of the alliances is just an inevitable consequence of this. Like, if you're Panama does not have a standing army, right? Like, they do not, this is not the kind of country that, like, looks at this kindly. Like, they are part of a secure Western alliance where they didn't have to, like, think that they had to deal with this sort of stuff. Panama is going to have real domestic things. They might have to reconsider things such as that. Like, they got rid of their standing army after a coup. You know, Denmark, they're like, you're really going to tariff us? right? Like, I've got this threat of Russia from the other side, you know, where we're bringing Scandinavian countries into NATO, and now I've got to worry about the American guy tariffing me. And it's like, I just think that there are also some real consequences to this in addition to kind of the silliness of it. Sarah, what do you think?
Okay. I think that one of the ways for us to approach this, you know, because yesterday JBL and I kind of tossed off a video. And it was funny. There were a lot of Canadians that jumped in the comments to be like, but we're a sovereign country. What do you mean? Why are you guys talking about this? And I was like, you know what? This is a fair critique, actually, because and some people actually pointed to JBL's New Year's resolution where it was like he said he wasn't going to chase the dumb stuff. And in print. That's right.
Yeah. We're going to chase the dumb stuff on YouTube. All right, Canadian YouTubers. If you don't want that, then you can read JVL at the triad.theborg.com.
Yes. We contain multitudes, and we're going to have our serious pants sometimes, and we're going to have our silly pants sometimes.
I'm sorry, Sarah. Can I interrupt for 30 seconds to explain why? And it's because I know that I should be a good boy and not do this, but I'm only flesh and blood. And part of me needs to. And so I'm confining that part of me to like YouTube instead of the important print product. And I feel like I should get some credit for that. That's all.
I give you credit. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, like similarly, right? Yesterday I tweeted, hey, if we're just like making new parts of America, I know a district in the United States that is bigger than both Vermont and Wyoming that might like a look. If we're just like grabbing 50 first states. Mm. And I had a bunch of people in my replies say things like, it is constitutionally, you cannot make the Washington, D.C. a state. And I was like, you know what, guys? Here's the thing. Elect the clown, get a circus. We are not going to opt out of calling out the circus parts of it. And so for the people who were in there being like, you guys are talking about Canada, like, you know, you could just take it over. No, we're not. Okay. We are living in the stupidest timeline, and because of our jobs, we are going to participate to some degree in that stupid timeline, right? So what JBL and I did yesterday was essentially parody. Obviously saying Trump's, you know, we're going to take Canada and we want Greenland. We were just marinating in the idiocracy of it, and that is our purview. Now, the serious critique of Trump, which I also think we always need to engage in, is, I'm sorry, I could have sworn that Donald Trump just ran an America First campaign in which he said that the neocon warmongers like Liz Cheney were the reason that you needed to elect somebody like Donald Trump so we could focus on the United States. So why is his first foray into something that looks like an agenda about doing things like taking over Canada, Greenland, the Gulf of Mexico? Like, are these America First? Because I was assured that America First was about focusing on things like our border, like not participating in these things in the world, like not going. I mean, are we going to go take these places by force? Who's the warmonger?
He said yes on the he said he's open to it on the press conference. Yeah.
And so I think that it's going to be tough for analysts because it is unserious in its progeny, right? Donald Trump is an unserious person. The ideas are unserious. They are impossible to essentially, like, this is why what the Canadian MP did is exactly the right way to respond. If he's going to say stupid things, let's go.
Yeah, let's
go. Let's go. And so that is our job, but our job is to tell you too analytically. Here's the serious piece. The serious piece is that he appears to have actually not an America First agenda, but an imperialist agenda. Or he's holding a laser pointer and didn't want anybody else talking about
the Jack Smith report.
Jimmy Carter or the Jack Smith report. And so he's throwing this out as chum. And we have to sort of be part of helping to disaggregate that for people. But I think that we should point out both things. That one, on one hand, it could be a piece of serious hypocrisy that is actually like frightening to our allies. Also, it is very stupid. And we should be able to say both those things.
I have just a couple of things on this. Just one is just a factual matter about the DC constitutional people. Yeah, you could just make Washington, DC just the mall. All right. And have all the people that live around that have a state. So just, it isn't really in the Constitution. Like, you could just make the Capitol and the White House and then the mall, the DC of the Constitution. So you could make DC a state, and you should. As for this question about like the seriousness, I think another important thing to layer into this, not to make conversation about Gulf of America sound high-minded or whatever, sound important or have some higher and greater purpose, because, you know, some of this stuff is just what it is. But like the group of people that Trump did well with, right? The only material they're consuming is Trump wants to take over Greenland and make Canada the 51st state, right? Like, that's the only thing they hear, right? Like, if you look at the David Shore did this data and how Democrats actually improved with people who, I forget what the bar was, but there's a certain level of engagement in the news and like reading the news. Like, Democrats actually improved with that group, the highest, most engaged voters. And Trump made massive gains with people that aren't paying attention at all. So if you like this idea that, oh, it's a distraction to talk about this and you should be focused on the real thing. Okay, like, sure, there are a lot of real things. Did a whole podcast today about reconciliation, and folks can listen to that. But like, for a political purpose, the Democrats need to compete on his turf for attention, eyeballs. Like, they've tried the process of like letting Trump do crazy stuff and be all over the Nelk Boys and Access Hollywood and all this sort of casual shit on TikTok while they gave serious speeches about democracy. We saw how that worked. So nobody's exactly had to figured out how to successfully do, you know, the asymmetric warfare back. We've been mentioning the Canadian lady as an idea of something that she did that was kind of funny, so it also isn't nothing to talk about this in the political context, right? Like that, the only thing that the people that the MAGA hat people, you know, who are the casuals are seeing is the silly shit. And so the silly shit is the real shit for them.
Can I ask a comms question of the two of you? So part of me thinks that we should lean in on all this, because Trump did say yesterday that Greenland was a vital national security interest for the United States. Okay. So if Greenland is, in fact, a vital national security interest, then he needs to appropriate it. And we should demand that he do it. Show me the money. Remember Jerry Maguire? Show me the money, right? And
how I said it. Go ahead.
But say to all of the Fox people that who are watching it now and who have decided, yeah, Greenland is important. Like, we should, okay, yeah, Greenland is important. We really need action from Donald Trump on this. What? Or is this the case that they're doing this all post, you know, ironically and postmodernly, and they're happy to argue with any lib who says Greenland isn't important? They're happy to say, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But when 6 weeks from now or 6 months from now, Greenland is still just Greenland and we've all moved on to the next thing, they're never going to actually be mad at Trump for not shoring up this vital security interest for the country. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? Is there a way to make him pay by, instead of like arguing about it, by saying, oh yeah, no, it is. It's super important. Mr. President, why haven't you locked this down yet?
Sort of. I mean, here's one thought that I've been mulling, which is we should hold him accountable for doing the things that he got elected to do. Now, I'm not sure he got elected to, you know, by Greenland, but he did get elected to focus on the American people first, right? Mm. And if his argument is that Greenland is in the national interest of Americans, I think we should demand he tell us more about that. I think that
take it.
Yeah, well, I don't. maybe.
Why not?
I don't.
Right.
Well, I don't think that we should argue for
the invading Greenland.
Invading Greenland.
Are you pro-invading Greenland, JBL?
Like, they're not for sale. They've made it very clear they're not for sale.
I mean, I'm pro-America. I'm pro-America. And if the American president says I mean, he gets the security briefings, so he knows more about this stuff than I do. If he says that it is a vital security interest for our country, then I can only assume that he's being derelict in his duty by not securing Greenland. And so I'd like to know why he hasn't done it.
Well, here's a comms question. Here's a comms thing I think that would be valuable.
Can we do that?
I don't think anyone's actually going to do this, but here's something that
I think
would be valuable.
Why is he being all cucked? Why is he being a Greenland cuck?
Why
is he not getting Greenland if he says he's going to get it? I do think hitting him there, like...
Yeah. I think that there's a kamikaze... Some people are going to really cringe at this. I'm just saying this a lot right now live. But, like, I actually don't think it would be stupid if you are somebody that is good at media, if you're Mark Cuban or whatever, to on January 23rd, to start to be like, you know, I'm thinking about running for president, and do an interview. And then from there, because then people start paying attention to you, and then use that platform to be like, yep, egg prices today. Or $7, like nothing's down. Are any prices down? He told me prices were going to be down. That was his number one thing. Are prices down today? Or do we have deflation yet? We don't have deflation yet. Do we have Greenland yet? We don't have Greenland yet.
Did he solve the Ukraine war? He said he was going to do that in the first 24 hours.
Is the Jeffrey Epstein? Where's the Jeffrey Epstein documents? I want to see it. I want to see every single page of the Jeffrey Epstein documents. Release them now. Donald Trump said he would. I'm going to go on Joe Rogan and the Nelk Boys, and I'm going to be like, why haven't you released the Jeffrey Epstein documents so far? Why are you such a loser? And I think that person probably doesn't end up being the Democratic nominee, but they might. I mean, that was basically the Trump strategy on the Obama. Like, this would be like a morally righteous version of the Trump Obama was born in Africa racist thing, where it's just like, I'm going to start to get attention for myself every day by pretending like I'm running for president. And in our postmodern world, maybe it becomes reality and I become president. I think that's about as good of a plan for somebody to do something that is useful and maybe accidentally make themselves president that I could think of right now. So if there's a rich
person,
could they
drive Trump's negatives up with that? I mean, that's the real question.
Well,
like, are Trump's,
here's the thing. That doesn't matter because Trump's negatives. Well, here's the thing. Trump is going to be a one-term president, going back to the lame duck thing. So it's not that you are trying you're not trying to make sure that Trump doesn't get elected next time. Here's what you are trying to do. And I think that there is value, legitimate value, in the performative stuff that Tim is talking about, because the job, so like, what are you supposed to do? Point is like, we need to discredit Donald Trump's presidency every day as it's happening. This is what Democrats have failed to do the entire time. Yeah. People should, by the end of Trump's thing, say, that was a failed experiment. That was wrong. We didn't get the things that we said. People need to understand. You got to tell them that story while it's happening. Why was Joe Biden such a bad communicator? He could not respond as things were happening, right? He could not explain to the American people why what he was doing was good and what Trump was doing was dumb. And so somebody's got to do that this time. They've got to be able to discredit Trump in real time every day.
I had wanted to talk about Eileen Cannon, but that's a nice pivot to Joe Biden, who just sat down with an interview for USA
Today.
Yeah, we should
do Eileen. Let's get to Eileen next. We'll do Biden. Let's do Biden first and Eileen next. Here's the other thing. This is one. I have a million things about this Biden interview. It's an enraging. But on the Trump part of there's one part of the Biden interview before we get to Biden himself.
Oh, my God, yes. You and I had the exact same thing. I know what you're going to say without us having talked about it.
Under the subhead in the USA Today, Trump's surprising compliment, Biden says that Trump apparently told him that he did some really great things with the economy during their private session. And despite the fact that Trump decried the state of the nation as a disaster and a mess, he said he was very complimentary of some of the economic things he had done, and he thought I was leaving with a good record. I think there's a lot to say about Joe Biden's naivete, which we should get to next. But there's a lesson to be learned about Donald Trump here. Like, the shamelessness, and this goes back to 2016 for me, and I almost never say anything bad about Jeb, so I say this with love. But, like, Jeb did the same thing with Biden with me, where, like, Trump would attack his wife on stage, and then afterwards he'd be like, bro, what's up? Like, try to give him a high five. Like, it was all a show. Was all a show. Like, the second the camera went off, Trump was like, hey, buddy, like, how you been? Like, da da da. Are things okay? Things good with the fam? Pat, tap on the shoulder. Like, it was apprentice all the way down. and it is Apprentice all the way down, and it fucking worked for him. And there's no, and this ties directly to what we were just saying about this imaginary person who wants to run for president to talk every day about how deflation hasn't happened yet. Like, the shamelessness is his superpower, and sometimes you got to fight fight shamelessness with shamelessness. And his the establishment Republicans, Biden on down, the Democrats, Biden, everybody on down, I never stuck. And like the fact that Biden would like share this anecdote without adding "fuck that guy" on the end of it is really maddening. So anyway, that's my there are many other things I have about this article, but that's my top take.
Hold on, I'm just going to add to this, and I don't know if this was what JVL was going to say, but no, there's something deeply sad that Joe Biden felt the need to communicate Donald Trump's support for him, Donald Trump's compliment, right? Because he, like a, it's a real beta move,
baby,
to be like, but the alpha said I did something good, and like I want to share it with you. It is pathetic.
My legacy is good. See, guys,
yeah. I have a great legacy. Donald Trump says so. I can't tell you. Okay, JBL, you give your take. I'm just going to warn the audience in advance. I need to burn Joe Biden to the ground over this interview. But please, JBL, you go first.
You know, so I was wrong, Tim. We had a different thing. Because what I stuck on was this. Well, I'm sorry. I'm just going to read these two paragraphs. When Biden met with Trump in the Oval Office a week after the November election, he urged the president-elect not to go forward with threats to target those who have criticized him or, in Cheney's case, helped lead efforts to impeach him. Here's the quote. I tried to make clear that there was no need, and it was counterintuitive for his interest to go back and try to settle scores, Biden said. How did Trump respond? He didn't say, no, I'm going to, you know. He didn't reinforce it. He just basically listened. This is John Fetterman saying, Kash Patel told me he's not going to do any of this stuff that he keeps telling everybody he's going to do. Democrats are so fucking stupid. Sorry. I don't even know what to say. We've all seen the same thing over the last 8 years. And Joe Biden's takeaway is, well, I did tell him that it would be counterproductive, and he didn't say no. So, you know, he was listening.
Sarah, I want to set you up to let you cook here. In addition to those two things, one other thing for people who haven't read the article, and then you can take from there. Joe Biden said that he thinks that he probably would have won. Had he stayed in the way in the race? It's presumptuous to say this, but I think yes. He said that based on polling he had reviewed. I'd love for him to share that with me. He then expressed no such confidence when asked whether he had the vigor to serve another 4 years in office. To that, he said, I don't know. And then he said, but who knows what I'm going to be when I'm 86 years old. So far, so good. So far, so good. That was Joe Biden to the USA Today.
Sarah, would you please nuke him from orbit?
Actually, I want to start with not just what this says about, because like Joe Biden was not going to win. He was going to... Kamala Harris saved his ass from getting absolutely annihilated and also taking the many more senators and many more House members down with him. She pulled his ass out of the fire. And how dare he suggest that it's on her. He would have won. He would have won, not her. Let me tell you what. This guy lives. And I'm sorry. He does it because he is too old and too addled and too narcissistic to realize what a disaster he was being. And JVL, I'm sorry, you're going to catch some shrapnel here because you just mentioned Fetterman and Joe Biden, people that you've... But, like, you should never lionize politicians. There are people that I like. There are people that I think are good. And there are people that I'm going to support because I think they are. But, like, the way in, like, Joe Biden, absolutely, his legacy is that all his talk for democracy, he didn't do the one thing that had to be done to actually help save democracy and keep Donald Trump out of office, which was after 2022, he had to walk away. So far, so good. Him saying he, of course, have you listened? Do you know what he, you know who he beat? He beat Medicare. That's who he beat. Go back, guys. You want to get mad at me or any of us for talking about Joe Biden? And I'll, and to be clear, this is probably the last time we talk about Joe Biden. But I'm going to get this off my chest before it's the last time we talk about Joe Biden. We got 4 years to talk about Donald Trump. So if anybody wants to be like, I can't believe you would talk about Joe Biden when there's all this stuff for Donald Trump. Yeah, he sat down and he said a bunch of things that are lies and that are delusional. And I think that really reflect how devastating his decision making was. And I do think that it's important to condemn the people around him who let him go on with this delusion. And they didn't do the best thing for the country, because the best thing for the country was him walking away after 2022 and letting his party have a primary like Justin Trudeau is doing right now in Canada.
I'm shocked that Hunter gave him bad advice.
Yeah, he's,
I mean, this
lying
guy
about
seems like he's so good at making life decisions. Yeah.
He's not at the point. I was just talking to somebody that works for a senator in a blue state. I guess I don't want to reveal them because I didn't tell them I was going to mention it on the podcast. But they're like, Biden was losing his blue, this blue state that Kamala
won. Losing
won,
Virginia.
You know, was losing. Okay. And in the senator's internal polling. And as you can be like, oh, well, polls are wrong or polls are wrong. I was like, no, like the directionally, like the polls were correct about how they, and if anything, the polls overstated Democratic support in most of these cases. So this was their internal numbers showing him losing a state that Kamala won handily. So, like, please, on the polling, please.
And I'll say one of the things that people are really going to dislike this, but I don't care. It's just been really bothering me. Let me tell you something. None of us, we wanted Joe Biden to win if he was the nominee.
Obviously.
We very much wanted Kamala Harris to win. But I was never in the electing Joe Biden business. I was in the beating Donald Trump business, because Donald Trump was the danger. And so the question was, who's the best person to do it? And it was absolutely obvious that that wasn't Joe Biden. He's not up to this job. It is irresponsible for him to think that right now, in this moment, he's capable of leading the country. And I think that I've seen some people put on their hair shirts over Biden and like, well, they should have done more to push him out. I don't know. Joe Biden put all of us in an impossible position. And that debate was...
Especially Kamala Harris, by the way. He put all of us
Kamala
in impossible
Harris.
Harris, but he put Kamala Harris in the most impossible of the positions.
Like, how dare he to her? The last thing I'll say is... Joe Biden was the only person who could have beaten Donald Trump in 2020. I was thrilled that Joe Biden got in. I was thrilled that he beat everybody else. I didn't believe a lot of the slurs against him, but he was always a deeply imperfect person. And so sort of the St. Joe stuff. Now, did I think he was sort of fundamentally decent in a way that Donald Trump is fundamentally mendacious? Absolutely.
And I
think it's important to separate like the criticism of Joe Biden from, is he better or worse than Trump? Because he is infinitely better on every scale. Literally, Joe Biden, who, you know, on life support, better than Donald Trump at his most vigorous. So don't get me wrong in a what about kind of way. But Joe Biden led us here. And his legacy, with all the talk of democracy, is that he failed to protect it in the one way that was really necessary to do it. And it's because of his narcissism, because of selfishness of him and his family. And there are lots of things that they did well and policy achievements and fine. But like, there's a way of reading this that's like, man, the gall that you have.
Well, that's the tragedy of Biden, right? Is that he governed very, very well and failed.
He governed
in the overriding strategic objective of his presidency.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he would have governed. He had one.
I wrote about that on Monday.
He had one self-criticism at the end of his governing. Was it
that he cared too much?
Narcissistic thing. What?
Was it that he cared too much?
Kind of. He said he actually said, "I don't think I've been very good at taking credit." But the other the substantive thing he said was that that they didn't get shovels in the ground quicker on infrastructure, and that's actually the one useful thing that he said the Democrats should think about, which is that they don't get this could be for another conversation. Maybe they don't get credit for their grand government projects at all anyway, and it's only we only have a cultural malaise, but. You certainly aren't going to get credit for them if you don't actually do them. And that was a big problem. The last thing I'll just say, I agree with everything Sarah said, so I don't want to belabor the point anymore. But there might be some people that disagree with the political assessment. We can't relive. I don't know. Counterfactuals, there's some things you don't know. Maybe there would have been a surge of white Catholics in Pennsylvania that would have gone to the polls for Joe Biden. He would have won or whatever. I find that preposterous on every level. And I think that people can't even imagine how bad the fall campaign would have been with him.
Because that's the part he's lying about. There is no internal poll.
I know there's no internal poll. He's lying about it. I know there is. I'm just saying, even if you are a listener of the view that like, oh, it was racism and like Biden might have actually won. Okay. The fact that he can't answer that question, that I would have had the vigor to be president in 4 more years, to say so far so good, when it's like, no, actually not so far so good. Like in the maybe the biggest night of your presidency, you had a public health event. So it wasn't so far so good. But like putting aside all of the politics, like Bill was really good on this. Bill Kristol was really good on this early. And a lot of times I think actually older people are really good about this, who are like, who see and peers or whatever, and Carville is really good on this. He's like, I couldn't be the president, you know? And it's like, actually, even putting all the politics aside, if you can't say yes, I mean, you know, obviously God comes for us all. Who the hell knows? Any of us could have a heart attack any day. But like, if you can't say that I'm certain that I would be, barring some crazy outside event, that I will be good enough in 4 years, then you can't do it. It's too important of a job. And like that fundamental underlying factor underneath the politics also gets me very upset. You're a public servant. You know, I wrote this in the last article about him, telling him that he had to get out. Was like, it's about us. Like that is like, I guess the fundamental thing that is lost in this interview is that like, it just over the last year, he really thinks it was about him. And most of his interviews betray that he thinks it was about him and his legacy. Yeah. And it's like the good Joe Biden was very much about y'all, you know, the Scranton Joe. So anyway, that's my final thought on this interview. Please don't do any more interviews, I guess, is my other thought. Just go.
Yeah, that's. I don't want to talk about Joe Biden ever again.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Because we're going to touch on Joe Biden while we talk about Eileen Cannon. So the ball's on these guys. The Trump lawyers went and filed a brief a couple days ago in which they requested to the Attorney General that the Attorney General not release the special counsel's report because they believe that that decision should be reserved for the next Attorney General. The balls to make that argument to Merrick Garland, the guy whose entire professional life was wrecked because Republicans said, yeah, we're not going to let this president do that job. We're going to wait for the next president to be able to do it.
It's
astonishing.
Point.
Astonishing. Yeah. But then we had Eileen Cannon.
Merrick Garland, you need to respect the process, okay? You've got to respect the norms and the traditions of the transitions of power. And please, you know.
And Eileen Cannon went and yesterday issued an injunction forbidding Merrick Garland from releasing the report, which covers two cases, only one of which she oversees. This is, I mean, she might as well issue an injunction saying that Netflix can't air the next episode of Stranger Things or something, because it has nothing to fucking do with her jurisdiction,
the Joy Reid
purview.
Show.
Right. I mean, it's the most insane thing. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because this seems to be a case where the Democrats need to understand and learn some lessons. And this is, for instance, something Joe Biden could have done in this interview, which is to say, no, I have been told that the president of the United States has total immunity for official actions. So believe you me, you guys are going to see that report. I don't care what Eileen Cannon's injunction says, because I can do whatever I want. Those are the rules. Yes? No?
Yeah,
I would have loved that. I mean, I think that the Eileen Cannon thing, and this is made for the Sarah and George show for 2025, but, I like some discussion of her moving up to a, circuit court, like the amount of damage that can be done by these type of judges. Also, Trump outsourced the judge process to Leonard Leo and these Federalist Society guys. And, it's kind of a mixed bag. There were some very traditional originalist, people that got judgeships that have convinced themselves they believe the Constitution and the original. Like, and some people there who are fine. And there's some people there who are qualified. And then there were some people there who were stooges, And then there was Eileen Cannon, who appears to be the stoogiest of the stooges, right? But, Trump sees that now. And whether that's the Supreme Court or a circuit court for her, whether this next batch of people is not going to be including any goody two shoes judges that are just going to follow the rules.
It's
going
to be no Gorsuches.
Like, it's going to be Eileen Cannon all the way down. And so, the fighting fire with fire element of this in the last 11 days, I'll defer the expertise to people who have legal experience on what exactly can be done, but absolutely that's where this administration's head should be at.
I cannot believe that for my 2025 prediction, I didn't take Eileen Cannon will be on the Supreme Court because I think she will be. And I've said this on the George show a number of times because it's very clear what she's doing. She has single-handedly done so much for Trump. That delaying that case, sort of the slam dunk documents case that they were withholding and getting him out of that, he will, justice, this is my prediction should have been, Thomas is going to resign and Trump is going to nominate Eileen Cannon and he's going to tell the FedSoc guys to go pound sand with, whatever, probably unserious, but still far more serious than her. Like, if she, even if we'd had more time on that case, and eventually she would have been probably reversed by a higher court.
Well, she was reversed. I mean, she was reversed.
She probably would have been removed.
She would have been removed. The thing is about Eileen Cannon, she threw herself on a grenade for Trump. It isn't just that she was issuing favorable rulings to him, that she was willing to do a bunch of things to blow up her own career by traditional legal metrics in order to help him. Like, that is going above and beyond, right? It's not just like, well, whenever it was a tie, the tie went to Trump. She was willing to do things that were so outrageous that she knew she was going to get reversed. And she knew that, eventually she might get pulled off the case and that would be the end of her career. But she was willing to let it ride, right? I mean, what an astonishing thing. Ty Cobb, I don't know if you guys saw this. Ty Cobb went on Aaron Burnett's show yesterday.
Handlebar mustache.
He said that he called Eileen Cannon a tool and said that she just would do whatever Trump needed her to do. This is not us. This is not like TDS pilled crazy resistance type saying this. This is a guy who was Trump's lawyer in the White House saying that this judge is so crooked that it's laughable. That's something, isn't it? You're very quiet, you two.
I don't even know what to say to it. It is something. And I concur with your original point that Joe Biden and Merrick Garland should tell her to pound sand. I'm not that optimistic they will, but I'm hopeful.
I don't think they will. This is a larger question because I think that, part of the reason the quote I read you about Biden saying, he did talk to Trump about not doing that stuff, and Trump didn't say no. I don't think these people, even today, understand what's happening.
Yeah, the other thing was he talked about the preemptive pardons question. He was asked about this, and he was like, yeah. kind of, He's like, well, we were looking at it, kind of depended on who he appointed, which was like maybe be an would pretty much be a stupid thing to have said on November 8th, but like is a really dumb thing to say on January 8th. Like, Kash Patel has been nominated. Like, what more do you need?
He has an enemies list. It's public.
I think we've had on all of our podcasts, like, I think that there are varying views and there are legitimate reasons to say we shouldn't give preemptive pardons. But like, it betrays a deep naivete to have one of your reasons be, well, we got to see what the staffing is going to look like. Like, we got a clear picture on what the staffing's looking like.
Yeah. Hey, can we just on this Biden thing, and then, but I want to then take it to Trump. This is an interview that he did that is, like, we're reading the transcripts of it. But even in reading the transcripts, you can see how often he loses his place, how often he, like, changes the topic midstream and is making points that aren't germane or, you know, he's like a little bit all over the place. There's tons of ellipses and commas and like swerves and whatever. This is going to go, I'm circling us back to the very first segment I meant to say this. I was trying to watch the Trump presser and I had two thoughts as I was watching it. One was, Ed had already gotten to the point a while back. It is tough to do our job because you do have to look at Trump. You have to listen to him and watch him.
It's hard.
And like, it's awful to listen to him.
Yeah.
Like Trump's always made me, like, I think I find him repellent. And so I've always had sort of a reaction of disgust as he talks, which makes it pretty painful to watch him. But as I was being forced to watch him for the purposes of listening to like the insane thing he was saying, his brain is soup. Like, listening to him talk is like deeply painful because he is saying insane things, but also it is taking him a long time to get there. He half the time you don't know what he's talking about. The amount of us that we're going to have to sit around being like, not just is he joking, is he serious, but like, what is he actually saying? Because he talks like a meandering crazy person. I'm sorry. I'm going to spend the next 4 years campaigning for age limits in politics. Nobody over 75 does anything but host podcasts.
We love you over 75s. Oh, that's great. You know, but like, enjoy life.
You know, I don't know. Some of the young MAGAs are worse. All right.
That's a good point.
Yesterday, Sarah and I talked about the Zuckerberg transformation. And then, Tim, you had Charlie Wartzel on the pod. It's a great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to know if we could just do like a little 5-minute redux on this, because the thing that I found the most interesting is that we, coming from politics, looked at the Facebook Zuckerberg rollout yesterday and said, oh, look, he's bending the knee in order to protect his company. And Charlie, who comes at this from a Silicon Valley tech reporter, looked at it and said, yeah, maybe, but I think Zuckerberg's pretty red-pilled. That is an interesting, interesting possibility, and I wonder what you guys thought of it.
Yeah, I my take to him then, which maintains, I think there's a both and element to this.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Like the
not all one or the other.
Yeah, sure. The performative nature of the suck up, but you know, there's something about I don't know. Over the last 5 years, I've had more access to like wealthy men, white men, than I had in the rest of my life. And I have a different view.
What kind of access?
I just mean like meetings, conversations, pitches, you know, whatever. I'm around rich people now sometimes. I'm not one of them, sadly, but we're doing our best. One thing that you notice is there's no amount of money that protects you from the weaknesses of the ego and like the desire to not be criticized. You know, like there is no, like I would have thought, like, for example, Trump there was a theory of Trump in 2016 that I think I never thought he was going to grow into the presidency. But there was a theory that, like, he had this hole in his heart. His daddy didn't hug him. He becomes the most powerful man in the world. And he doesn't really need to do all this stuff anymore. He can, like, he's not going to become serious or whatever, but he could just enjoy the accoutrement of the office and enjoy his victory over all his foes and anyone who ever slighted him and anyone from Manhattan that didn't invite him to a party, right? And that he would get over it, you know, and that he would feel satisfied and fulfilled. Obviously, that did not come to pass. There is that with Bezos and Zuck and Musk too, right? That it's like, why are these guys so prickly? You know, like, you could imagine, I would have imagined a world where I would have thought they would have been very self-satisfied. And, like, there'd be other issues. You'd be in a bubble and you'd be ego. But, like, you wouldn't really, I don't really care what these peons can make fun of me if they want or do memes about me or whatever. But who cares? They lost. I won. I got the big boat. I got the big house. I can do whatever I want. Fuck you. Okay. Like, I would think that would have been me. If life had taken that turn. But that actually appears not to be the case. And these guys are all very sensitive to criticism. And they're very sensitive little flowers. And that I think that Charlie's point, because the thing that he was able to bring to it, being a tech reporter and experiencing the pushback from Facebook Flax and such, is like, these guys actually get really annoyed by Casey Newton and Kara, yeah, and Charlie and, like, whatever. They get very annoyed that, like, their friends send them an article. They're like, look at this mean thing that somebody said to you on Substack. And I do think whether that, not radical, but, like, so is it red-pilled? Like, depends what you mean by red-pilled, right? I think it's red-pilled in the sense that it's like, these liberal school marms are annoying me and saying mean things about me, and so fuck them. I'm going to throw in with the racists. Like, I think that there is something to that for sure. And that is as much of a motivator for these big tech oligarch guys as the just, like, money. Because they already have a lot of money. Like, they already
Sarah,
have unlimited
you understand,
money.
You understand humans, which I don't. Why is it? Because it's clearly true, I think. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to do this yesterday with you when we were talking. Like, I had a kind of Charlie Wartzel take with JVL yesterday, which is like, you know, why is he moving from California to Texas? And I was like, okay, well, there's both things are happening. On one hand, he's like, I'm sick of people in California telling me I got to do this, that, and this as part of the business regulation. Texas is a much more hospitable environment. But also, I've been trying to sort of satisfy what feels like unsatisfiable liberals, both from, like, a regulatory standpoint, but also a cultural standpoint. And he's like, instead, I can satisfy not Republicans exactly, but red pill types by, let's say, masking it. And this is my current pet peeve, because I might be sympathetic to the annoyances of the left. And I think JVL has always, in JVL, my ongoing conversation about why is this all happening, I think he's always underplayed or understood how much of this is because the most annoying liberal in everybody, when people's lives are like the thing that they vote against and the thing that repels them, the person who tells them, they're like, you get told you're sexist all the time for things that you're like, don't feel sexist. And then you're like, well, why don't I just be sexist? Quick aside, Elon's algorithm is insane and is putting insane things into my feed. And I'm trying not to be on Twitter too much, but I saw something yesterday by a guy named Jason Whitlock, who I've I watched one video. I read one court filing about this Joy person on the Fox Sports, and I read one thing. And so then it just started feeding me. And so I started getting all this, like, sports stuff. And I got this thing from this guy, Jason Whitlock, and I watched the whole thing. Why? I don't know. This is why, how we get poisoned. And it's about him being like, they brought me this Joy person to test for a screen thing, but she had these big cans and this peanut butter skin. And how was I expected to work with her? And I just said, I don't have the self-control. And I was like, this guy right now we have moved into a world, an environment where he's like, I just got to keep it real with you guys. Just got to tell you the truth. And all the comments are like, way to keep it real, bro. Yeah, way to tell us. And so we live in a world where men now are like, you know what? I just got to tell you guys, I actually can't be a professional in the presence of an attractive woman. Can't do it. Don't expect me to do it. How culturally could you expect me to do it? I can't be a professional. And so that is happening in our culture. And so I was like horrified. And I stopped myself from going and trying to learn the whole thing and figure out who all these players are. Because I was like, you don't really want to know. But I was so...
You don't want to learn any more about Jason Whitlock. I could tell you that.
That's fine. That's fine.
And if you're a listener and you don't know who Jason Whitlock is, just live in that ignorance, please, and move forward.
But my point is, like, there's a whole culture and world out there now where that is, like, meant to be... that I think is gross, but is in some ways like they're hiding behind free speech. They're hiding, like, his point. He was doing this and he was willing to say it because he's like, they're trying to foist this kind of woke, like, I gotta have a woman on the show. They're telling me I gotta have a woman. Oh, how could I talk about sports with a woman? This is the domain of men. Like, this is what he was saying. I'm used to sitting around talking with men.
But the woman with the cans not have free speech? I'm losing the thread on free speech.
No, my point is,
the woman with the cans, she has free speech.
My point is his willingness to say this was in reaction to what he saw was being foisted. Woman was being foisted on him. Yeah. Right. And so I can make a value judgment in all of the, like, Elon, right? Elon has, is clearly a despicable person. And a sad person. Like, these are sad, broken people who have not good relationships with people, but he has clearly in part been broken by, right, the criticism of the left, people who criticize him. And I think part of it, this is a much discussed thing, he's got a trans kid who he doesn't see, right, or has a bad relationship with. And so he's got all these feelings about trans. It's like this stuff about, you can't just say it's one thing or the other. It is complicated, but I do think that it goes back to some of the issues that where we have this culture of what men are doing. But one of the things, sorry, I'm sorry to be jumping around, but part of it was the Zuckerberg thing that made me crazy was he hid behind free speech as a reason for doing this. And I've seen so many people on Twitter, these like the anti-antis are all like, there's just no doubt about it. Donald Trump is unleashing this moment of free speech.
Barry Weiss meanwhile, said this was great.
And I don't mean this about Barry specifically, but if you think that Donald Trump is pro-free speech, you are either being willfully ignorant or you're dumb.
You are
You're a mark. He is currently suing a pollster for putting out a poll he doesn't like, right? He has talked about pulling the licenses of all the people. Hmm. Who were critical of him or who hosted debates like CBS and ABC.
Or who interviewed Kamala Harris and edited her interview.
There's nobody who is less free speech oriented than Donald Trump. And frankly, Elon Musk. But these tech guys all know that it codes right now, the free speech stuff. And they've embraced it to try to have a high-minded reason for why they're red-pilled, which I actually think goes back to just being like base-level annoyed with progressivism and wokeness and how people have used it to criticize them when they want to be treated as masters of the universe.
So I have some thoughts on this. First of all, I come from vaguely the conservative tradition. I don't know. I've been yelled at by progressives for on and off 20 years. And
same.
Like, I'm fine. It's okay. It's their right.
You didn't get great to do that. Feedback on your book about natalism from
did
progressives?
Did not. And that didn't make me need to be a race. Like, I just don't understand, right? And so what you hear, like, you know, one of the things is, you know, Charlie said yesterday about Zuckerberg, you know, like, Zuckerberg just wants to be able to say the R word. He wants to be able to use the R word. And you know what? He can. He can. Mark Zuckerberg could use the R word all he wants.
Yeah.
Now, some people may say, like, hey, that's bad. You shouldn't do that. But nobody's stopping him.
Yeah.
Jason Whitlock can say out loud that he doesn't want to work with the woman with the cans and the peanut butter skin. Like, In fact, he said it. And Mark Zuckerberg is worth $209 billion. He's not losing anything. Who's stopping you? Nobody. And this idea that some random person on Twitter will say that I shouldn't use the R word, and so that makes me need to be a racist. But Donald Trump...
Or Deadspin wrote a blog post about me, about how I made an offensive comment.
But Donald Trump can say that maybe he'll put me in jail for the rest of my life, which is a thing that happened. And that doesn't... And this is what gets to me. It shows that with these guys... They don't respond to like gentle correction or attempts to sort of nudge them, right? I mean, the Biden administration did not actually go after big tech. Like the Biden administration did some gestures at modest regulatory reform, and the response of the big tech oligarchs was to run and go full Trump. Donald Trump threatens to put people in jail and destroy their businesses, and people, instead of pushing back against that, accommodate it. And so the lesson for Democrats is you don't go and try to say, hey, we'd like to, you know, do some regulatory reform here. We think that crypto is a security and needs to be treated as such, and we have some antitrust issues that we'd like to do. No, you threaten to put people in jail. And that's how you get these people to come around and listen to you and treat you with respect, right? Because this is they're not, again, the most minor criticism.
That theory is only true if you think that these guys take Donald Trump seriously. And I don't know that. I don't think they do.
I don't know. I mean, Jeff Bezos seems to be taking him pretty seriously. Mark Zuckerberg's treating him pretty seriously. Mark Andreessen.
No, that's not taking him seriously. It's that they think he is an idiot who is transactional, that is easy to manipulate, and that they can get what they want out of him by just playing a little bit of a game.
Maybe. But why is it they don't get upset, right? I mean, this is what I'm saying. Like, Mark Zuckerberg clearly gets upset that Kara Swisher says mean things about him, but doesn't get upset when Donald Trump says, I think I'm going to put him in jail for the rest of his life.
Because he secretly respects Kara and knows the people that he respects respect Kara. And so it hurts when she does it. And so instead, he seeks out the safe harbor of an idiot he can manipulate, who he doesn't respect, and who is followed by a bunch of people he doesn't respect, that he feels like just by making a few concessions, he can continue to be sort of king of the world.
That's one theory. The other, the Charlie Wurzel theory, is that he's been so red-pilled that he decided that Trump was basically right.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't think I should have been jailed, but the critique of me was correct, actually. And I should embrace
Mark Zuckerberg.
That worldview and be all based.
Great. Good show, long show. Exceedingly long show.
Great show. Good stuff. Good news is, like, only the real ones are still here with us right now. So, like, you guys got the good shit.
We'll be back next week. Follow the channel, hit subscribe, give us the thumbs up, share this stuff. We got to get big, because that's the only way we're gonna push back against all this insanity from the oligarchs and the idiots in the opposition party who don't realize that they're supposed to be an opposition party. We all gotta get hard real quick. Good luck, America.
Not me. Right now.